You talk about the hot stove league in the wintertime. We've got a hot winter, hot summer stuff going on right now with the winter teams. I want to welcome back Mike Grenier, who is a longtime sports journalist, a basketball enthusiast, and a great sports writer and friend of ours. Mike, welcome back. I hope you're staying cool.
We're staying cool, and we're still anticipating, despite the 90-degree weather a lot of days or so, we're still anticipating a big Celtics, Knicks, 76ers, all that good stuff is coming up in just a couple, 3 months.
It is, and let's get right to it. Several things I want to talk about, and I'll tease the audience in chronological order. I want to talk about the Kuz, Don Nelson, and Jaylen Brown. So let's get started. I want to start right away with this thought, Mike. I've been watching some videos of Larry Bird's finesse in terms of passing and assist and so on. And I didn't realize it because it's been so long ago. He must have studied Bob Cousy, because I looked at Cousy videos, and oh my God, if he were 3 or 4 or 5 inches taller, that would be Larry Bird. So what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, Bob Cousy is a remarkable human being, number one, not just because he had his great career with the Celtics and part of the whole Bill Russell, most of the Bill Russell era, or part of it, and was way ahead of his time in terms of behind-the-back passing and his flashy play and all that stuff. But he went on, and he was a great human being then, and I think he just turned, if I'm not mistaken, did he just not turn 98 years old? And
yep.
He stays, still lives in Worcester,
yep.
And his mind is as keen as it's ever been. He comments on things that go on in the NBA now. He comments on people like Larry Bird and Jaylen Brown and all that stuff. He really still is up with everything. And in that regard, it kind of makes you feel younger, you know, because he's still the whole package in terms of mentally, he still put it together. You know?
Yes, I agree, and it's fun. It's fun reading that stuff about him, and you know, the plaudits he's getting now. But he's still, as you say, he's very critical in his analysis of the NBA.
Sure.
And I mean critique. He critiques it on so many different levels.
Correct. Yeah. He takes issues. Obviously, at age 98, no one's going to come back and discipline him. But, you know, he'll take issue with Brad Stevens over certain trades or moves and all that stuff. And I don't think Cousy was too keen on losing Jaylen Brown and acquiring Paul George as a return. I don't know how he feels about Mitchell Robinson coming over from the Knicks, 3 years of $48 million, and the guy only shoots 40% from the foul line. So that's not the type of guy Cousy would like on the court, whether it was 1955 or 2025, you know. So he'll make his opinions known, I think, throughout the season. And that's why we look forward to hearing from Kuz. And wasn't it a great thing that they dedicated the court to Kuz at Holy Cross,
yeah,
beloved Holy Cross School, yet another honor for him that he could still appreciate because his mind is so keen. So the honors keep coming his way, and thank goodness for Holy Cross that they haven't crossed him off the list. He's still a big part of their history. He's a huge part of their history. And he's like still a goodwill ambassador for that school.
Have you met the Kuz?
Yeah. They named the, I believe they, sort of like Pat Connaughton at St. John's Prep, I believe they call it the Bob Cousy Court at Holy Cross. And I just think that's a fitting honor. Undoubtedly overdue, but Kuz felt truly honored by it. And you know, he's just a great representative of Worcester and Holy Cross and the Celtics and his own family, of course.
All right. What I asked, I don't think you heard me, the question, have you met Bob Cousy?
Oh, yes. Bob Cousy, certainly, yes. At the Guard at various times when he's come in the early days, in particular back in 1970. And he's was as down-to-earth then as he is now, easy to talk to. I remember when the Celtics acquired Kevin McHale, and we spoke about how he might impact the Celtics, and I called Bob Cousy. Somebody gave me his number, and he was as gracious over the phone and gave me as much time as I needed to right from the Salem News office, and we spoke about Kevin McHale for quite a while, and he thought he would have a major impact, and boy, was that prophetic. Of course, McHale went on to win 3 championships in 1981, 84, and 86, so Cousy still knows his basketball, even at age 98.
You know, I love it when you bring up stuff like that, because I'm always amazed with what I do, being working at a little radio station and now having this little web thing, website. When I call upon a person who's well-known in whatever field it might be, whatever field of endeavor it might be, and that person responds just as graciously as though I were Walter Cronkite or somebody. And it's really cool.
Yeah, that's rare these days, but it's still done by that old-school athlete.
Well, not only athlete, but I was just talking to someone today. One of my favorite interviews of all time, Mike, is with Harvey Leonard of Channel 5.
Sure. Oh, yeah, Harvey Leonard. What, he was a weatherman for, I believe, it was like 40-something years, and I watched with great interest myself when he went off the air and had tributes to him and all that, and he was really dedicated to being a great meteorologist. I think he made the call, Rick, in the 1978 blizzard, right? He made the call as to how much snow we would get.
Not surprising there. I mean, but, yeah. You know, such a nice man. And it's weird, Mike, because one of the people I always wanted to meet since we've been doing sports, I always wanted to meet Bill Russell. And the other person I wanted to meet was Bobby Orr. I still may have that chance. Who knows? But to meet Bill Russell would have been one of my, you know, one of my really great dreams come true, if you can believe that. He was just, to me, a true man of the 20th century in so many ways.
Oh, Russell, of course, civil rights activist. I met him, of course, I was still very young when he was playing in the late 60s, and I became a sports writer a couple years after that. So I got to meet him actually when he was a head coach. And we drew the post-game interview just like as part of the normal proceedings. But, of course, the tremendous icon to this day in Celtics history. 11, as we know, Rick, some fans, younger fans, probably don't know that he won 11 championships in 13 years, which is totally incomprehensible these days that a guy could win that many championships. But, you know, that's how tremendous he was as a player, as a two-way player, offensive and defensive. And that's how great a leader he was, because the other players had to follow his lead. And he had a great supporting cast. But still, Russell was a team player all the way, and that's the reason they won so many titles in such a short period of time. I mean, I think we're going to go to the grave knowing that Russell is the greatest winner of all time.
Boy, I'll say. Great hero of mine, absolutely, and on the court and off the court. All right, we're going to jump out of order here, Mike, because you mentioned Kevin Stevens, and I know that the Jaylen Brown trade is still fresh in everybody's mind. One of the things that is continuing from a fan's perspective with respect to the local media is the fact that, you know, people are saying, okay, well, maybe he had to go, maybe he didn't, but the Celtics did not get much in return for him. But what I want to ask you, and you can go in any direction you want, but if you're a Philadelphia Sixers fan, what are your thoughts right now knowing that you've got Brown, Embiid, Maxey, and this other guy? I mean, come on.
Come on. Not only do they get LeBron as well to that three-pack, you know, now a four-pack. But VJ Edgecombe, the other guy with Maxey, had a tremendous rookie year, averaged 14, 15, 16 points a game. And he'll also you have to share the ball with him, too. That's what makes Philly so dangerous, because Edgecombe might be the fifth option, but no one else in the league will have a fifth option like Edgecombe. So when you look at the 76ers' hierarchy of options and players, as long as they share the ball and they want a championship, you got LeBron, who's still very effective at age 41. He averaged 21 points a game last year. You have Maxey, who was right up around Jaylen Brown territory, averaging 28, 29 points a game. You have Jaylen Brown himself, who averaged 28.7. And Embiid, of course, you know, he averaged around 26, 27, but he only played 38 games. So obviously the concern with the 76ers will be a health issue, right, Rick? We know that, because there's some aging guys there. Embiid, even though he's kind of still in his early 30s, or he's kind of an older in his 30s guy. In other words, meaning like he breaks down a lot. He only played 38 games last year. LeBron, he still can be an Iron Man, I think, because his conditioning is so good. And the other factor, of course, Rick, he doesn't have to carry the load anymore. Of course, in Los Angeles, Luka Doncic became the franchise player. But LeBron still carried a big part of the load. Now, with Philadelphia, with Embiid there and Jaylen Brown and Maxey and Edgecombe, LeBron can go any direction that the team wants. He can be the second scoring option. He can be the third scoring option. He can be the rebounding option. He can be the playmaker. There's so many different options that you have with him playing that position. And we can't believe we're saying as the Celtics people that LeBron is going to be such a bad. But you, if you ignore that, you just be ignorant. You know, if you didn't acknowledge that LeBron will be a major factor with the 76ers. But I think Jaylen Brown, of course, he can even, I don't want to use the word relax, but whereas prior to acquiring LeBron James, Jaylen Brown probably thought, well, I'm going to have to score a lot of points because MB may not play a lot of games and Maxey will score a lot, but I have to be the second scorer. But now he can have an off night and say, okay, I've only hit three of my first nine shots, and he might only need to take three or four shots the rest of the game because MB is scoring or Maxey is scoring. They have a luxury of a ton of scoring, Rick. That's the way I look at the 76ers. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How well those guys will play defense, I don't know, because there's age as a factor with those guys. Although Jaylen Brown is still in his prime, Maxey's still a young player. I don't know how they're going to be defensively, and we don't know the peripheral part of that team. In other words, who are going to be the seventh, eighth, ninth guys in case there are injuries to the front liners? That's the big question mark with the 76ers. But when you look at their starting lineup, to me, they have to be listed as the favorite.
Well, the Sixers have always been my second favorite team next to the Celtics, always. They always have been since going back to when Wilt Chamberlain played over there. Now, let me ask you about ego and chemistry with this team.
Yeah.
What?
Well, with all the players, I think they're much more willing to sort of remove their ego as the biggest part of their game. In other words, you know, I think LeBron learned that last year playing with Doncic, that he was no longer viewed as a franchise player, and he was actually fairly content to play a secondary role. Jaylen Brown, I think, will fit in perfectly with whatever scheme they want to run offensively and defensively. I think he just would like another championship. I think Embiid probably feels rejuvenated. If he can stay healthy, he probably feels this is his best chance to win a championship. And, of course, the young players, Maxey and Edgecombe, will go along with whatever the older guys are doing because they want to win a title as well. So if you're Philadelphia and you haven't won it, I believe, I want to say, Rick, 1983 was their last championship. So they have sort of like the Knicks last year. They won it for the first time in 53 years. It's been a long haul for the 76ers since they won it. So I think they're going to try to be on the same page and they know that this is a great shot at winning it, especially with age being a factor with some of the guys on that team.
All right, very well. That's what I was thinking, was that they would check their ego at the door in order to win a championship and play together. Let me ask you one more question about Jaylen Brown, Mike, because it's been bothering me since he got traded. When he first got traded, I think I posited three things. One, it was a mistake by Stevens. He's lost it. Two, the ownership wanted him out of there. Or three, Stevens had something else up his sleeve. One of the things that I suspect, and I hope I'm wrong and I haven't read anything about it, but Jaylen Brown was such an outspoken, intelligent, off-the-court black man who commanded respect. He just did. And I wonder, in Boston sports, is there any negativity in that where they say, well, we can't have him, speaking like this so much off the court or whatever? You know what I'm trying to say? He was so good.
You know what?
He was so good in the community.
Yeah, the guys who have followed the Celtics like we have for 55, 60 years, guys like Bob Ryan, for example, who worked for the Boston Globe, guys who have been with the Celtics organization, and I've heard this even personally over the last. Jaylen Brown did more in the Boston community, mm-hmm, as a community activist than any Celtic in history.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Yep.
Both in terms of creating, supporting activities, supplying his own money to build. Did he build a court like off the Charles River there for kids a year or two ago? Very involved in the community. Very positive in the community. I know the black community absolutely adores Jaylen Brown for what he's done over the last 10 years, okay? Now, Jason Tatum, not so much. He's done things for the community, but he's not adored like Jaylen Brown is by black activists and black people in the Boston, not just Boston, but in the suburban areas, the urban parts of Boston, Mattapan, and some of the communities where there's a lot of problems. He's come to their aid as well. supporting them both vocally, making speeches, and supporting them by building basketball courts or quietly slipping them money. I know for a fact that he's really loved by the Boston community. So Boston, you know, I think the Boston community is very upset that they lost that guy. And from just from the basketball standpoint, I think what hurt Jaylen Brown in terms of coming back to play with Jason Tatum this year was one comment that he made, whatever it was, halfway through the season, when he called himself the best two-way player in the world.
Yep.
I think that hurt him immensely just from the strictly from a basketball standpoint, because Jason Tatum hearing that while he was rehabbing from an Achilles heel injury probably didn't like that. Brad Stevens probably, no one has come out and said it publicly, but I probably think that Brad Stevens didn't like hearing that. And I think it created somehow, whether it was subtle or even worse than that, I think it created a divide between Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
You know,
I think that a couple of nights ago, Rick, we saw Jaylen Brown at a press conference, and he was asked when he was introduced to the Philadelphia media if he'd spoken to Tatum, and he said, not really. And to me, that said a lot.
You know, and that's all sad to me because you don't have to be a friend to be a great teammate, and they were great teammates.
Right.
Apparently, they weren't friends. But I think the other comment that I think is ridiculous that he gets hounded for is when he said, you know, this, in effect, in so many words, he said, this was my favorite year. It was my most accomplished
right.
year. And people got, especially the sports media in Boston, they got all over him because he didn't talk about championships. But I understood what he was saying. It was most satisfying.
A lot of people don't put things in context. He wasn't comparing it to the championship season.
Right. It was his most satisfying year, like you mentioned, all the things he has done in Boston. Plus, he did carry the team. It was very positive for the whole point. Anyway, I'm beating a dead horse, I guess, but I'm going to miss Jaylen Brown. And if the Celtics can't win it, I hope the Sixers do.
Right, and I think too, Brad. From looking at it from Brad Stevens' viewpoint, I think he was looking a couple of years down the road when both Jaylen Brown and Tatum would be up for extensions on their contracts,
mm-hmm.
and basically, they had to figure out which of the two they were going to keep because they couldn't pay both, okay? And so I think that certainly played a role in the decision that Brad Stevens had to make. So I think there was that component as well. He's looking ahead for a year or two down the road when both players would have been up for a major extensions. And, again, they would have had to go over the salary cap and into an area where the new ownership doesn't want to go, the so-called second apron, which you and I can't profess to understand all the mechanics of the financials, right?
Yep.
But, obviously, they couldn't have afforded both players. So I think that played a role as well. And that's one reason, another reason why Jaylen Brown is gone. But I think Jaylen Brown, he has a chance to be better than ever. Even if he won't probably come close to averaging 28 points a game, but he might end up being happier there, playing a lesser role, and having fun while Maxey scores and LeBron scores and he scores, and they're gonna be a lot of fun to watch. And of course, the Knicks undoubtedly hate the move to have LeBron and Jaylen Brown joining the 76ers because they're coming off their first championship since 1973, and they're still a loaded team. And they're probably looking at the 76ers and saying, wow, they're going to be tough to overcome.
Yep, and they're right down the Jersey Pike.
That's right. There'll be an intense rivalry there, Rick.
Is Jaylen Brown a lock-in for the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think that remains to be seen, but I think he's trending the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I think give him a couple more years, and certainly if he has, let's say, two good years with the 76ers and they win a championship, I think he's a lock. Right now, I don't know if he's a lock. Although the NBA Hall of Fame is less stringent than some other Hall of Fames,
mm-hmm.
in terms of statistics and all that stuff. So I'd say he has a darn good chance of making it at this point in his career.
Okay. All right, before we talk about Don Nelson, maybe a quick analysis on the off-season move by the Celtics and what you see with the future led by Brad Stevens.
Yeah, well, you know, Paul George, as everyone knows, if we don't know it yet, Rick, he just turned 36 years old in May, all right? And he's only played more than 70 games once in the last 8 years.
Wow.
And that's a major concern. And kind of people who looked at that trade, they looked at what Paul George did against the Celtics in that series this past spring, and said, wow, he actually played well. He averaged like 17, 18 points a game, and he played good defense, ironically, against Jaylen Brown. So they look at it from that aspect, and he can still shoot, and he can still score. However, his availability, as always, will be the question. He's only played a total of 79 games in the last 2 years. That's 40 games a year. That's less than half the schedule. So I think Coach Joe Mazzulla will have to use him judiciously and play him, limit his pitch count, so to speak. And does he play 25 minutes a game? Does he play 30 minutes a game? Obviously, Tatum is coming back. He'll get a heavy load. But, you know, it'll be up to Mazzulla as to how many minutes he wants to play Paul George. You're going to need his scoring. And guys like Peyton Pritchard are going to have to continue to play great like he did last year. And Sam Hauser is going to have to step up his game. And the new acquiring Mitchell Robinson, he's a good rebounder, but he's not really an offensive force. So there's a lot of question marks with the Celtics' offensive scheme heading into next season. Am I looking forward to the season? Yes, but it's clear they're clearly a step below Philadelphia and New York at this point. And we couldn't say that a year ago when they were coming off the title year. They weren't a clear step below Philadelphia or New York. This year, we can clearly say that. They're definitely behind those two powerhouses in the Eastern Conference.
You know, final question about the Celtics, Mike, is I think they were exposed in the playoffs with the playing against the big man, having a big man in the middle. What's it look like for them?
Well, I think Nemus Kita has made great strides as a young player. He averaged 10 points a game last year. He averaged just a little over 8 rebounds. He was their leading rebounder for the season. And obviously Brad Stevens tried to address that by acquiring Mitchell Robinson. The Knicks, let's face it, the Knicks hated losing Mitchell Robinson because he's a secondary center. He's a great offensive rebounder. He's a very good defensive rebounder. He's a shot blocker. But what I want to point out about Mitchell Robinson for Celtics fans is that I can tell you right now in December, Rick, when you and I are watching Celtics games and the 20,000 that are at the Boston Garden, when they see Mitchell Robinson throw the ball like a baseball pitcher at the basket at the free throw line, the word I will use is squirm. You will squirm. I will squirm.
Okay.
Every Celtic fan wearing Celtics colors will squirm when he's shooting 40% from the foul line.
Oh,
and teams
God.
Will intentionally foul him just as Joe Mazzulla did the last few years. When Mitchell Robinson was on the floor, they deliberately fouled him because they knew there was a good chance he was going to miss both free throws.
Well, talk about that. Don Nelson, the one-handed push from the free throw line.
One-handed push had one of the most, you're right, he was a stylist, right, Rick? He had such an, sort of like Rick Barry. Remember Rick Barry hit an underhanded free throw?
Yep.
And he hit like 80% of his free throw. And Don Nelson, who sadly passed away at age 86 this week, he had an unusual free throw style. And didn't he make, Rick, one of the most iconic shots in Celtics history?
Hello.
Game 7, 1969, L.A. Forum. The ball deflects off Havlicek off a steal. It goes to Don Nelson at the foul line. He takes a kind of that push jump shot. It hits the back of the rim. It seemed like it went 85 feet in the air.
It went up to the ceiling. Yeah.
And the Celtics walk off with yet another championship over a much younger and more talented Los Angeles Lakers team.
I remember when they got Don Nelson, I always thought of him as an enforcer. He seemed to me like a big forward. I mean, he wasn't tall, but he seemed to be very strong inside.
He was a scrappy player, Rick. And I'll tell you a great Don Nelson story that maybe a lot of people haven't heard. He went to the University of Iowa, and they had a very good team. And back in those days, of course, Iowa was all white guys, okay? And they had a very good team on a national level. Not a chance, maybe not a championship caliber team. However, a good team was going to win a lot of games. Now, the year that he was looking forward to was his senior year because they had all 5 starters back, okay, including himself. However, the other 4 starters all flunked off the team.
Whoa.
The other 4 starters all were academically ineligible a single minute in Don Nelson's senior year. And Don Nelson had to carry the team with a bunch of newcomers, and I think they upset a great Ohio State team that year during the regular season. some fan wants to correct me on that, let them do it. But I know that for a fact that Nelly was the lone ghost out there.
Hmm.
The previous year, they were a great team. They lost the other four starters through academics, and Nelly had to work with four new teammates, and still he made a good year out of it at Iowa.
Did you get to interview him?
Oh, yeah, because, of course, he played in that second championship era of Celtics when they won it in 1974 and 1976, and he was a big part of that team. He averaged 10 or 11 points a game, a lot of times coming off the bench, but he played with that JoJo White, Don Nelson group. So I would regularly be, along with Gary Larrabee, my former colleague at the Salem News, we'd be in there covering the team, so we got to talk to Nelson quite a lot. He was glib, he was smart, he was funny, and he was definitely team-oriented. He fit in with the personalities on those teams that won championships in 1974 and 76, led by John Havlicek, of course.
Tell me about the transition of Don Nelson from Boston Celtic to one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Right. And, you know, Nelly, I always pictured as a very smart guy, a sharp guy. So in that respect, I thought he could become a good coach. However, the other side of Nelly was that he was a fun-loving guy. So I don't know if that would fit in with the demands of being an NBA coach. However, obviously, he matured enough where he became not just a coach, but a coach who finished right behind Greg Popovich in terms of wins. Never won a title like Popovich did with those great teams in San Antonio. However, he won 1,335 games.
Mm.
That's a spectacular number, and he did it with a number of teams. And not only that, he was able to transition to the modern player's look at basketball. In other words, in the 1980s and 90s, you know, he had the Hardaway era in Golden State, and he coached those Bucks teams. I mean, he had to adapt to the modern players and their attitude towards the game and making more money. And Nelly really did a great job of transitioning. He was an old school coach to begin with, but he did transition to the newer times. And I give him all the credit in the world for that, and that's why he stuck around for so long.
Well, he's still a Celtic in my mind. Always will be. Same thing with Cousy.
No,
and these guys who coached elsewhere, they're still Celtics. You know, they grew up as Celtics, and we let them go to other places.
That's right. That's right. I mean, Nelly was five championships teams overall. Three in the Bill Russell era, and then the two with Havlicek and Dave Collins, 1974 and 76. So that's one more than LeBron. I mean, that's one more than LeBron.
Yep.
So LeBron is actually chasing Don Nelson, among others. He's still chasing Bob Cousy, who had six championships. And Sam Jones, who had, I believe, 10 championships. And John Havlicek, who had 8 championships. So the Celtics still have a lot of guys in that winning category who, unlike LeBron, didn't form their own. They couldn't do it back then. They didn't form their own teams or chase championships by joining teams that were more talented. Now, that's the modern era player, building these super teams. That's the one knock against LeBron, of course. He's chasing championships by positioning himself to go with the best team available.
All right, Mike, it's been half an hour. We've covered a lot of material. Any final thoughts?
No, I guess we just get ready. Now, Rick, how crazy is this? As people are looking forward to that first Celtics game, regular season game, they open against the Detroit Pistons in October. It's like a Wednesday afternoon or a Thursday afternoon, like 3:30 in the afternoon. I'm tapping my bald head and thinking, how does that happen? Right? But the league is so popular, it has such a great broadcasting deal that they could put games on at any time and they'll be well viewed.
Yeah, my only complaint is everything is going a la carte now, so you've got to pay for every single game in so many different sports. But, you know,
right.
Because I'm from another generation, obviously.
Well, we are too, and it's tough when you don't see, for example, you want to watch the New England Patriots, and they're only on the Prime Network
mm-hmm.
on a Thursday night.
Yep.
And you and I haven't had the Prime Network for 45 years, you know?
All right, Mike, we'll talk again. That is Mike Grenier, sports journalist and our basketball insider. This is MSO News Sports.